and welcome to another edition of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
I'm Katie Heindel.
And before we get to the regular business off the top of the show, we have to introduce a guest, Katie. On today's show, we are joined by stand-up comedian, host of Faded in LA, a wonderful comedy show that I really want to get to at some point if ever I'm able to travel to America without fear ever again. We are joined by Mike Malloy at Mike Malloy Esquire on Twitter. Mike, how's it going, man? Thanks for being here.
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Very happy to have you on the show. We should give the people a bit of a notice before we start today's show. Mike is a Celtics fan. There will be some Celtics content to be discussed in today's podcast. And we should begin with the way we begin every show, which is by telling you that today's episode is brought to you, of course, by Rasheed Wallace, who on this day in 2009 scored 8 points and 4 rebounds on 2 of 7 shooting off the bench for the Boston Celtics in a win over the pre-process Philadelphia 76ers, 113-110. Mike, got to ask you about your recollections of having Rasheed Wallace play for your team. It is a joy that neither Katie nor I got to enjoy as Toronto Raptors fans. But of course, you got the 1 year with Sheed. What are your recollections of that one season of Sheed playing in Boston?
Yeah, I mean, we got the 1 year of him, and it was certainly a shell of Sheed past, but it was a good Sheed. It was a great serviceable backup center, and didn't work out when he had to become the full-time starting center after Perk got hurt.
Yeah, so you had to watch starting center Rasheed Wallace at an advanced age. What was it that he didn't bring to the table that Kendrick Perkins did? Because I think there's this sort of impression that maybe Kendrick Perkins is kind of a bum, but he was like pretty legitimately good for a sec there with the Celtics, at least.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much with the Thunder. Yeah. What was the drop off like there?
He was horrendous offensively. He wasn't able to do anything, but he was able to stay in front of people, and he was able to protect the rim, and he was able to grab rebounds. And that was something that at an advanced age, Sheed couldn't do as well as Perk was doing at the time. But yeah, I mean, should Kendrick Perkins have ever been an all-star? Probably not. Should he like be completely dismissed? Basketball-wise, no. Opinion-wise, yeah. Don't listen to a thing he says ever.
Yeah, I think I have to concur with you on that one. Katie, we've talked about Celtic Sheed before in the past. It's, you know, it never hurts to revisit old things we've discussed, because we usually steer clear of this era of Sheed. You know, do you have any soft spot for this Celtics team because of the existence of Sheed, or is the Celtics factor enough to rule them out of your heart entirely?
Maybe it's the one glimmering year for the franchise for me. But I feel like, you know, she was maybe too powerful for the team, and it was probably for the best that he was only there for one season. He didn't really look so good in green, you know?
Yeah. He's more of a, you know, a red, a blue, you know, I think the Blazers is probably the peak of Sheed fashion. The Pistons did the job as well, but I'm certainly partial to the Sheed in Portland era more than anything else. We're going to get to a lot of stuff on today's show, everybody, with Mike Malloy in tow. We are, of course, going to dig into the world of NBA fights, because boy, oh boy, the NBA is messy as hell this season. I love it. It's fantastic. Isaiah Stewart putting in quite a performance in his response to a LeBron James elbow a couple nights ago in Detroit. We're going to dig into that fight. We're going to look back at the history of fights, the trajectory of fights in the NBA right now. You know, since last we spoke, I believe Miles Turner and Rudy Gobert had a bit of a salsa dance that doubled as a fight as well. Plenty of, you know, brouhahas cooking around the NBA this season. So we will get into that and sort of look ahead. Are fights back in vogue? Are they coming back? Is the Malice at the Palace 2.0 sometime in the near future? We'll dig into all of that. And then, with Mike being on the show, we are going to talk a little Celtics. We're going to dig into a Celtics fandom, talk about the Celtics season so far, and then we're going to play a little game that I have called Anger Things, because I just wanted a dumb pun. It doesn't really say anything about what the game is, but I will be quizzing Katie and Mike on Danny Ainge quotes about a certain topic in the future. So we will get to that at the segment we're trying out this week to close things out. We got our posters of the week and all that stuff as well. Just a reminder before we get into the meat of the show, go to our Patreon, patreon.com. patreon.com/abasketball with two H's. $4 US, $5.50 Canadian will get you in there. You get our Discord chat access. You get access to mailbag episodes every month, just exclusive to our Patreon subs. And you get ad-free episodes of this year's podcast. So please sign up in there. And we hope to see you join the Discord chat and join our Patreon community. Thank you in advance. We appreciate you so, so much if you are one of those people. All right, without further ado, let's get to it. We're going to talk about the messy NBA, Isaiah Stewart fights, everything that goes along with it. Coming up in just 1 second here with special guest Mike Malloy. All right, Katie, it's the thing we're talking about this week with Mike Malloy on the show as well. And it's NBA fights. We thought maybe we'd get a reprieve from fights in the last 7 days or so. Not the case. Isaiah Stewart and LeBron James getting into it a little bit, I guess more than a little bit on Isaiah Stewart's side of things over the weekend. Both got suspensions. I think Stewart got 2 games. LeBron got 1. Let's begin with this fight. Katie, we'll start with you. I found this to be a wonderful performance from Isaiah Stewart, probably a little over the top, a little extra, but I loved the sort of, there's so many elements of this that I want to dig into. So let's just maybe get sort of general thoughts first, then we can kind of dive into the play-by-play of what went down and get to some of our favorite morsels. But where are you at in sort of in terms of your reaction, your response, where you were sitting and viewing this fight, Katie? How did you take it all in?
Very different from your gleeful, I wouldn't like refer to anything that happened here as morsels, dude. I was pretty uncomfortable, I have to say, because I was a little bit nervous that this was a fight that was gonna like go the other way. Like, we've talked a lot before about this idea of what makes an NBA fight, and I've written about this before, but like what makes an NBA fight feel sometimes more contained or like not as severe or serious, you know? And this was one that I was like, I don't know, this feels like it could get serious soon. I didn't see it in real time. I saw it like 30 minutes later when I heard that it was happening, and I went back and started to watch all those like fan footage and all the different angles of everything coming in, because you couldn't really tell at first from just like the regular broadcast that LeBron, I think, like intentionally kind of wound up and knocked Isaiah Stewart in the eye. There was a lot of blood. I've had some superficial head wounds. They bleed a lot, but that said, it was like a pretty severe hit to the face. And I think that I was kind of surprised that he tried to get at him 3 times, but also that nobody could contain him. I think that maybe there's like some questions now around like, if you're going to have arena security, they should maybe be a little bit bigger.
I was going to ask you both, we will get to it in a sec, like your favorite characters in this whole sort of event. And I do think one of the security guards who's like roughly 5'7", who just has his hands up but isn't touching anybody, is one of my faves. Mike, let's go to you. What was your sort of experience of this fight? Did you see it in real time? Did you see it on Twitter afterwards? And you are a Celtics fan living in LA. I can't imagine you are thrilled about the Lakers' existence and, you know, constant appearance on national television and in the national discourse. Does that change your opinion of what went down here at all?
Oh, I mean, I've definitely enjoyed this Lakers season, but from like a sicko perspective of watching them fall apart and watching all the pieces that absolutely don't work together try to not kill each other. Watching Dwight and Anthony Davis nearly come to blows was fun. But yeah, I mean, that was a dirty play. I was watching it live. LeBron looked at the dude, measured where he was, and threw a downward elbow, which is a move that you're not even allowed to do in MMA. Like, that's an illegal move there. And he's just like, no, I'm just gonna hit this guy with a 12-6 elbow. That's completely fine. Nobody will get mad at me because I'm LeBron James. And that's, he was right. He got 1 game. It was a pretty pitiful response to a very obvious hostile act.
Yeah, probably should have been more. I think I probably, as much as Stewart probably escalated things to the point where he deserved his suspension, I would say
I don't think
the
he did.
Inciting act.
He didn't hit anybody.
Yeah, no, he just ran extremely fast.
He just
and
ran
was, like,
around and didn't, yeah.
Extremely agile, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess the Now I don't understand why he got more games, really. Like, LeBron, as the inciter of
one guy's
the incident,
LeBron James and one guy's Isaiah Stewart.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm right. You're right. I'm a dummy. That's very clearly the answer. I do want to dig into the sort of play-by-play of Stewart here, because I think my favorite part of this entire thing is it seems like Cade Cunningham kind of has him reined in. Like, he's got him sort of toned down, and like, he's like, I'm fine, I'm cool, I'm fine. And then he like makes a break for it after it seems like he's kind of lulled his teammates into thinking he's been contained. I don't know if we've ever seen something like a second or third effort like this in the NBA in terms of a fight. Like, I can't really think of anything that comes close to it as a comparison. I mean, Mike, Katie, you guys are both NBA fans, kind of going back over the annals of history here. Mike, let's go to you. Like, do you have a fight in NBA history that you feel like is even like a close corollary to this one? There's no punches thrown or anything like that. It's not really a true fight. It's more a sort of song and dance. But like, the vibe of this one is like especially unique, because usually it is very much just like a hold me back from not doing anything type of league. Like, hold me back was actually needed in this case.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely reminded me of like before the fan threw the cup in like Malice at the Palace, where like it was a lot of John. It was, and then something happened where like it escalated and kept escalating and like kept not dying, where you thought it was going to die down and it didn't. But obviously without the like fans getting punched sort of thing. But I mean, a lot of these guys are just jawjacking. They're not going to fight. If you're LeBron James and you get in a fight and you're suspended for a game or two games, that's $1 million out the window. Mm-hmm. And granted, if you're LeBron James, you're going to make it back. Like, you'll be fine. But like, look at each fight as like, do I want to pay $500,000 to fight this guy? Yeah. And you'll probably say no.
Yeah, I mean, I think Isaiah Stewart would have easily given up the, you know, 25K or whatever he's earning. I do believe he would have thrown punches at LeBron had he gotten to him.
He had that chance. He was standing right in front of him. He was standing right in front of him before they got pulled away. He could have done that.
That's true. Yeah.
He didn't want to. He wanted to look like he wanted to.
Yeah. I'm watching it back on mute right now. You're right. His arms are kind of held back by Jeremy Grant. Like, I don't know if he had like the radius to throw a punch. Like, there was no like space to cock back like a Serge Ibaka jab or anything like that.
He's definitely within headbutt range. And if somebody's got your arms and somebody just busted your face up and you really want to fight, hey man, that's a good way to get back at him.
Yeah, yeah. Katie, any extra thoughts on this whole line of thinking?
No, I mean, I agree with Mike. It reminded me of like the first kind of acts of malice, you know, before fans got involved.
The first wave.
Yeah, yeah. The first, and like that's why I didn't feel so gleeful about this as you apparently did, Sean, because I was kind of like, ooh, like what could happen here? Because there's all this like milling around. Well, and like straight up sprinting around. But it seemed like it could escalate at any point. I'm kind of curious as to what LeBron said to him, because I think at first, like, yeah, there it was just like this group of dudes and everybody getting pulled apart, and that felt familiar. But then the fact that he like tried to come back twice. I mean, I do, you know, like I do like after the dust settles to come back to things like this and kind of take them apart like a Renaissance painting and just like study, as you said, like study each act. I have to say there were tinges. Because I don't know who it was. I think it was maybe a Lakers coach, like grabbed onto Anthony Davis's leg for a minute. And so that did remind me of when Jeff Van Gundy did that to Alonzo, but he got really trampled. He got much more trampled than the guy who was on Anthony Davis's leg. I really liked when Russ squared up like miles away from everybody else, like an old timey boxer, like the Notre Dame Leprechaun. I saw a couple people comparing him to. I thought that was pretty apt. I have to say the dumbest fallout I saw from this fight was people arguing on Twitter how the suspension was more detrimental to LeBron because he stood to lose more money for the games that he was going to miss. Whereas like Isaiah's going to lose money. And as I would actually say, if you're going to be a loser and talk about the money involved, it's going to be much more detrimental to him than it would ever be to LeBron.
Yeah, that's such a bigger portion of his earnings. And it's not like, you know, on a day LeBron gets suspended, I'm sure he can pick up a job that's going to make that $500,000 back.
Yeah, he'll just throw like a tequila party.
Yeah.
And call all his friends. Yeah.
Mike, did you have a particular favorite character in all of this? A side character, perhaps?
I didn't break down the game film that much after because I was just watching it live. So after it was done, I was kind of just like, all right, well, I've seen enough. I know a lot of people online were watching very closely. But yeah, I mean, it's a bunch of guys acting like they want to fight. They don't actually want to fight. And it's totally understandable. But like, save everybody the goddamn time and stop this silliness. So we can either play a basketball game or not. If you want to fight, fight, but stop the running around and not fighting.
So I want to get into this because I think, Mike, you're a wrestling fan, right?
Oh, yeah. Big wrestling fan. Okay.
So I do kind of want to get to the whole idea of, you know, the level of seriousness or not with these fights. As, you know, I think I've kind of alluded to my kind of glee when they do go down. I kind of find that they're pretty low stakes and I kind of enjoy the messiness of it all. Do you, as a wrestling fan, Mike, like derive any joy from these sorts of fake fights? This is not me, you know, any sort of commentary on wrestling by any means, I should say. Totally wonderful art form. But when it comes to the NBA, I feel like the fakeness and the sort of lack of any sort of fear that it is going to, you know, devolve into a malice-like thing does kind of amp up the joy factor for me a little bit. Do you feel that at all as a wrestling fan who kind of is, you know, accustomed to the pomp and circumstance of conflict?
No, because I don't want to watch wrestlers play basketball either. I tuned into the basketball game to watch the basketball game. I tuned into wrestling to watch the wrestling. And I, you know, don't get peanut butter in my chocolate on this one. It's just you're not gonna fight. It's like watching a porno that never starts. It's like where they just fix the the oven, and then that's it. You're just like, all right,
yeah.
That's not what I wanted to watch, but okay.
Katie, are you? I know. I think you're sort of on the other side of this than me in terms of the enjoyment of the fake fight and the pageantry of it all. Are you? Yeah, I'm guessing you're kind of in the same vein as Mike here.
I mean, I like some of the fake, very contained ones. I really liked it when Miles Turner and Rudy Gobert just kind of hugged each. Like that was a funny one because they were like so tangled up, and they were waiting to be pulled apart, but no one could pull them apart because all of their teammates were at the other end of the floor. I thought that was really funny, and I guess indicative of like the larger fakeness of what the, like NBA fights usually are, is that like it's just guys waiting to be pulled apart by their friends. But I didn't mind that. I guess once everybody, like, I didn't really mind the like Jokic shoving Markieff like halfway across the floor. Like we talked, you made a whole dumb game about that on an episode for us.
Should also note, I think Markieff is still out with the injury he sustained in that. So perhaps that was not in the best taste. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he's just taking a vacation, right? I think he's fine. I don't usually mind them. The one I really didn't like, we've also talked about this before, but the one I really didn't like was when like Serge essentially like choked out
Marquise Chris.
Marquise Chris, yeah. I didn't really like that. But for the most part, the rest of them, I don't know, they're entertaining. But I'm not like, oh, this is a ripoff. I need to see them punch each other in the face.
Right. So there's been a pretty clear uptick, I think, this season in fights or pretend fights or, you know, theoretical fights. Mike, I'm curious, do you have any theories as to why this might be? It's, you know, if we've seen lots of people behave like jackasses kind of coming out of their homes for the first time in 18 months. Is it just tied to that? Is there, Katie noted in our rundown here, is there a potential perhaps that like the looser foul rules are leading to just like a little bit more angst and a little more shoving and all that? Like, do you have any sort of speculations as to why NBA fights seem to be on the rise?
I mean, I definitely think it's a lot of part one. You look at just anywhere in this, especially this country right now, and people are fighting in airports, fighting in McDonald's, fighting in Targets. Just everybody's very annoyed from being inside all the time. And I think the people that are outside the most are probably the dumbest. So they're ready to do stuff a lot more mm-hmm. than the people that are, you know, being safe and being inside. Sure. I think that's definitely a part of it. And I like, I guess I think a lot of this is probably about like the haves and the have nots too, is like, hey, LeBron's going to get away with that and I'm not. And that pisses me off and I'm mm-hmm. fair. What am I supposed to do about it? Like, and sometimes you just go, I want to hit him. And then you realize you're at work and you probably can't. So that's probably a part of it too. But yeah, I think it's definitely a lot of part one where everybody's just been pent up and everybody's acting weird and everybody just is angry. And then multiple other factors as well.
Yeah. Katie, any theories on your end?
Yeah, like I won't discredit my own half-baked theory, which was that I wonder if honestly, like, cause some of these jabs and like shoves and even just like jostles or grabs would have gotten calls before. Right. And now mm-hmm. it's like, everybody's got to play through them, which I think is a good thing. Like, I think it makes the game a lot more entertaining, faster, like more interesting to watch. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a slight adjustment. Granted, I'd say the guys that are the most used to getting those calls aren't the ones that are getting into it, like Trae Young and James Harden. They don't really sure. seem to give a shit, right? But I don't know, maybe a little bit. But I think, I feel like it will just, if that is any part of the case, I feel like that will just kind of even out as the season goes on and dudes get used to it. Granted, I do wonder if there are going to be some like new simmering rivalries out of this chaotic period.
Yeah, let's dig into that. Like, are there any in particular that have you particularly interested, Katie, at like some, you know, tete-a-tetes that have formed that maybe we haven't seen kind of played out over the course of a full season? We need the next matchup between two teams to really see it come to fruition.
Well, I think when the Nuggets play the Heat again, which is soon, isn't it? It's pretty soon. If Markieff is back, if he's recovered.
I mean, I feel like the Heat are going to, you know, throw down regardless. Yeah, they play on Monday, so that should be fun. I feel like regardless of whether Markieff is there, the Heat feel like a team of guys who are going to go to bat for their guy, I would say. Jimmy Butler, you've also noted Jimmy Butler as a key figure in this whole conversation, Katie, in our rundown here. What about Jimmy Butler compels you when it comes to the world of NBA fights?
Well, he's always around them, but he's never really in them. And he's always the one right. who's like sprinting so hard. Like once he sees it's being broken up, and you know I love Jimmy, but like once he sees it's being broken up, then he will come and sprint as fast as he can to get there and just be like screaming in everybody's face. Obviously, there was like the whole season where he was just making like kissing faces like at the side. Like just, I don't know. He is kind of what I said was he's like that weird Where's Waldo lost item of NBA fights, you know, when Waldo would be like, where's his cane? Where's his goggle? Oh, no, his glasses, not his goggles. Where's all this other stuff that you had to find and no one really did? I feel like that's kind of like Jimmy always places himself far enough away from the action that he can get there very fast once it's under control.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let's leave this conversation off with this. So it's, you know, again, we've talked about how it's kind of spiraled a little bit this season. There have been more fake fights than ever before, some real fights, all that. Mike, I'm curious, do you think we're at any risk here of like the, like, again, I feel like most people view these things right now as pretty low stakes, not actually going to amount to anything. Do you think there is a chance that we could kind of veer back towards like the pre-Malice days at all, where it is a little bit more sort of, oh, this could actually spiral into something bad? Or is like the money involved that we've kind of talked about throughout this segment probably going to dissuade that from ever taking place?
Yeah, I think the money is obviously a big factor. And I think the league is also going to get pretty sick of this shit pretty quick. They are very protective of their image. They are very protective of, you know, the networks that they work with, the brands that they work with. And they don't want their players doing something that isn't playing basketball during a basketball game. That's understandable. This isn't a part of the game. This isn't like hockey where it's just, you know, you have a scrap and then that's over. These mm-hmm. like these physical things, like they keep escalating and they keep going further. So it's like they just kind of got to be like, hey, cut the shit, or we're going to have no tolerance for this. Cause I don't want to watch basketball players fight. I don't give a shit about that. I want to watch basketball players play basketball.
Yeah, that's a totally fair way, I think, to round out our conversation on NBA fights. We will pivot now into a conversation about the Boston Celtics with special guest Mike Malloy. Dig into the Celtics season, dig into, general Celtics fandom stuff. And then I have a little game. I'm going to quiz Mike and Katie with quotes from Danny Ainge, and I will detail where those quotes come from in just 1 second. All right, we have reached the segment we're trying out this week, and on this week's show, we're going to be doing a segment called Anger Things. I have a game around Danny Ainge quotes I'll get to in a second here, but first, whenever we have a guest on the show, we do like to talk to them about their NBA fandom, the team they like, how it all came to be. Mike Malloy, you are a Boston Celtics fan, as we have mentioned already on today's show. What's your sort of Celtics fandom story? Is it basic, you know, born in Boston, you root for the Celtics because they're awesome type of an arc, or is there something else kind of there? And I guess, you know, moving forward to today, what is the fandom experience for you watching this Celtics team, which has been quite good for a long time, but has also been kind of maligned and seems like maybe there's some weird vibe stuff going on every other year there?
Yeah, no, so I'm from Boston originally, and I've been a Celtics fan my whole life. I came up during the like tail end of the Bird years, so, you know, right. More being told how great the Celtics were as opposed to seeing it for the big chunk of the beginning of my life, and then things turning around during the, really not turning around until the Pierce years. I remember every year that we thought we were going to have a good pick, it just didn't work out. The 97 we were supposed to get done. We were like odds on favorite to get the lottery ball that would get us Duncan, and we ended up with 3-6 where we got Chauncey Billups and Ron Mercer. So I remember that not sitting well with me because I was like, hell yeah, we're gonna get Tim Duncan, we're gonna fix this, we're gonna finally like be good. And it didn't happen until a few more years when we got Pierce, and then things got better.
I'm curious, Mike. So, like, Katie and I are Raptors fans for a very long time. You know, the Raptors fan experience was making the best of a not very good situation and finding your guys to kind of latch on to. You know, Katie's and Amir Johnson acolyte, for
still
example.
It's still that. It's back Johnson. To that show. No, and it's also back to that for being a Raptors fan. Okay.
Yeah, I'm still really kind of coasting off that title. I'm looking at my like championship bobblehead from Kyle Lowry, and it's still keeping me doing all right. But that has been a large part of the Raptors fan experience. You know, Terrence Ross, for example, a guy I latched onto with a doomed end, of course. I'm curious for you, Mike, with a team that has won so much and has had a lot of stars and had a lot of sort of like, you know, the Big Three era and all that. Is there that same inclination to kind of latch on to weird role players and really kind of dig in, or is it more of a star focused fandom? And if so, then you do latch on to those weird guys. Do you have a particular favorite or two who are sort of the standout weird guys that you loved for, you know, whatever bizarre reason over the course of your time rooting for the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Celtics fans have always had like weird fringe players that they've liked. I remember like Walter McCarty was like a massive fan favorite during the early 2000s. And a lot of it used to stem from our announced team. Like Tommy Heinsohn and Mike Gorman were their homers, but they like actively like love guys. They love basketball. They love the players, and they love guys that just are ballers, that just want to play ball, that just want to be on the court and fill a role. So I mean, guys like that. And I certainly, you know, obviously we have our stars, but there's those fringe guys that I love now. Grant Williams, I love that dude. He runs like a toddler. He's great. He's our best 3-point shooter right now. He's got just a weird shaped head, and he loves that Settlers of Catan game, and I don't get it. he's a little nerd, but I love him.
I didn't know that. And I love that.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is. I just know that he likes it, and that's great.
There's
by
a lot
me.
Of sheep involved. Sheep are like the highest valued commodity.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, sheep, there's wood. Yeah, it's a real survival type game. That's a good one. Grant Williams does really, like, I feel like if that guy was on my team, I would be a big fan. You know, nothing like rooting for a guy who can't really jump but still manages to make it work.
Yeah.
I have to ask you too, Mike, our teams recently played in a playoff series. It seems like it was a long time ago, but it was actually only like 14 months ago.
Yeah.
It was a great series. Raptors losing 7. You had like the OG buzzer beater to keep it from going to 3-0 and all that.
Yeah, that one wasn't great.
Yeah. What was your overall sort of experience of that series? I remember that being one of the more, like, and this was on the heels of the Raptors going to and winning the championship. I found myself more stressed during that Celtics series than I did in virtually any part of the Raptors run, outside of maybe a game or two to the title. What was your sort of memory of that series and how it kind of, you know, made you feel the kind of garbage that only fandom can make you feel?
Well, I mean, that was a series we wouldn't have won if Grant Williams didn't block that shot in, what was it, game,
right.
Game 7, I think it was. So, like,
yeah.
You know, those role players, those guys that you love, you know, they get to have those cool moments that you remember, whereas opposed to, like, Jason Tatum, there's, like, 100 things that he's done in the playoffs that were equally impressive, but I can't remember all of them. So, yeah, that was definitely a stressful series. Siakam is a guy that I can't put my finger on. Is he good or not?
Nobody
knows.
He's
good outside of literally that series. It was perplexingly bad in that series. It was awful. Jalen Brown punked him. There's no two ways about it.
Siakam had a rough run in the bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like the only thing he knows how to do is spin move. And like, I think defenses should maybe prepare for that.
I think they have. I think the thing with the spin move that bugs me about it too is it's like when you get really good or well known for something and then everyone's like, do that thing that you're known for all the time. His heart's like really not even in it anymore, or certainly wasn't like last season in Tampa and then in the bubble. I don't know. TBD. Honestly, I'm like a bit different from Sean on this. I'm kind of TBD on Siakam.
Yeah, I'm definitely a Pascal optimist. I think he's quite good. I think he's the best player on their team. What does that mean? I don't know, but I think he's quite good. And I mean, yeah, they win that series if Pascal is anything but a shell of himself. I think that's pretty clear considering how razor thin that whole series was. I got to ask you too, like, did that series, I know sort of Kyle Lowry has been someone that people are learning to appreciate more this year now that he's playing with the Heat. Did you gain an appreciation you did not previously have for Lowry during that series?
No. I don't like him. He's on the other team. He's good. I've always known he's good.
But all right, well, that's all we need.
I don't appreciate him. He's doing that to my team. Get him the fuck out of here.
With that, thanks for filling us in on your Celtics fandom there, Mike. We are going to play a game now. We were speaking off air before about Danny Ainge. You did have some good praise of Danny Ainge. And look, he did assemble the team that won a title. He assembled the big three. He fleeced the Nets in that hilarious trade. Part of the fun of making fun of Danny Ainge is knowing that actually he is pretty decent at his job and has made a lot of good moves. However, there are a lot of moves that he did not make during his time with the Boston Celtics. Mike, I'm sure you're familiar with this phenomenon as well around every trade deadline and draft, the series of quotes that Danny Ainge would sort of put out explaining his rationale for not trading for X star here or there. Based on that phenomenon, I have come up with a game. It's called Ainger Things. Again, no, name has nothing to do with the game. I have 7 quotes here from Danny Ainge from various times over the last few years of his tenure in Boston. Concept of this game, I'm going to read the quote. Mike or Katie, you will buzz in with your name as your buzzer, and you will get to guess which year this quote came from, and for an extra point, you get to name the player that this quote is referring to. So there's 2 points available with every answer. Again, I have 7 quotes here, and I will. I think we'll let the guest. Oh wait, no, it's a buzz-in thing. It's not a go first thing. Never mind. You don't go first, Mike. We're just gonna read the quotes, and as I'm reading it, if you want to buzz in before I finish the quote, but that by all means you can do that. But that might make the answer a little bit more difficult to give. But it does up the style points and difficulty, which is cool. All right, are you guys both ready to play Anger Things?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think Mike's going to win, though.
All right, quote number one here. And again, these are about either trades that were made or trades that were not made. There are a couple in here of trades or acquisitions that did actually take place, and I think they're also kind of funny considering the context. So here we go. Quote number one, quote, "You've got to find good deals. It's not about making deals. It's about making good deals. And I remember Red Auerbach told me one time in my first year on the job, some of the best trades I've made are the ones I didn't make. And then that actually has stuck with me. This year, I think everybody feels good that we didn't make any moves with what the market prices were."
Mike?
That could be any year.
Mike?
I want to say that was about Justice Winslow.
That is incorrect. That was not the, I was at the 2015 draft? God, that's a long time ago. It was not about Justice Winslow. So that's incorrect. Katie, because Mike got the first part of the question wrong, you get a chance to steal and also name the player it's about. So name the year, and you know, if you want to like frame it around like the part of the season or the league calendar, you can do that as well, but just the year is what I'm looking for here.
What if I just guess the year? Because I don't think I'll ever guess the player.
Well, I mean, it's just, you get 1 point, that's fine. You get a bonus point if you guess the player.
2018.
It's not 2018. This is from the 2020 trade deadline when he was asked about not acquiring Clint Capella, Davis Bertans, or Andre Drummond. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
This is one of the smaller non-trigger pulled. Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry. It gets the stature of player goes up as we go along here. So no points for either of you on question one. We go on to number two. Quote number two is, quote, "When we acquired him, we didn't acquire him with the idea that he's going to be with us for just this year. We acquired him with the idea that he potentially could be here for a long time."
Mike?
Mike.
Evan Turner? Or no, Evan Fournier.
That is Evan Fournier, correct. Yeah. Which by association would be the 2021 trade deadline. I'll give you the two points.
Last year.
Yeah. Yes, I will give you the 2 points. That is about Evan Fournier, who notably stayed with the Celtics for a long time, if I recall. We will move on to the next question. It's 2-0 for Mike. Here it is. Quote, "Low post play, and he's a terrific passer from the perimeter. Brad Stevens likes to run his offense through his bigs on the perimeter a lot, so that can be helpful. And he's been a good rebounder, so we think his experience can provide something for us."
Mike? I want to say that's maybe Horford this year.
That is not about Horford in 2021. Incorrect. Katie, it goes to you. Year-end player. He's talking about the specific qualities of this player after bringing this player on board.
Rebounder. Is it your dude Cantor?
It is not my dude Cantor, sadly. In fact, it is your dude, Greg Monroe, Katie.
Greg Monroe.
Your
that's
fave. Oh. Yeah, this is the 2018 buyout signing of Greg Monroe, Katie's favorite player, non-Amir Johnson
angel.
Division.
An angel on earth.
So it's still 2-0 for Mike. We have 3 quotes remaining. Wait, 4 quotes? Yeah, 4 quotes remaining. Never mind. Here we go. Quote, "We knew him getting traded was likely. Quite honestly, I thought he was going to be traded last summer," said Ainge. "He's a terrific player, but we've had many conversations with them over the last couple years. We just couldn't get anything done."
That's probably about Butler.
Are you buzzing Mike? In with an answer, Mike?
Yeah, Mike. Butler 2 years ago.
The year was the 2017 draft, but yes, this is about Jimmy Butler. I will give you the 1 point for Jimmy Butler. This is after not trading for him. Were you upset about that one, Mike? That was one that felt like it could probably happen.
No, because we would have given up Smart, Brown, and Tatum for him.
Really?
Damn. Yeah, it was something ridiculous where it was like at least 2 of those 3 were involved in every trade they talked about. And I was a guy that was saying I didn't even... I didn't want to trade Smart and Brown for Butler because I thought Brown was a few years away from being able to do most of the things that Jimmy Butler does at a much friendlier contract and with a much younger age and with a much less injury history at the time. Obviously, he's had a little hammy issue this year, but yeah, I mean, I like my guys, and I'm like, for the most part, there's nobody on the Celtics, you know, save like Enes Kanter, that I'm just like, I don't like watching this guy play basketball.
Mike Ainge over here. Unbelievable. You get a point there. It's 3-0. We'll move on to the next quote. Quote, if I feel like it'll help our team, we explore every trade of players of a certain magnitude or superstar first ballot Hall of Fame type players. We're going to take a look and kick the tires and see if there's something there. But that's all. I think those things are unlikely.
Ooh. Katie.
Katie.
Did he ever say anything about Ben Simmons?
Not on this list, no. Ben Simmons is incorrect here.
Someone has referred to Ben Simmons as a car and kicking his tires. So I guess it wasn't Danny Ainge. Good on
it was
him.
Not, at least not in the context of the quotes I have curated for this game. Mike, you have a chance to steal the point here. Do you know what player this is about?
I honestly don't. I don't even have a guess. It seems so, you know, generic.
Sure. This, of course, is about Kawhi Leonard when the rumors were very, very hot and heavy in the summer of 2018 before the Raptors picked him up. Was that a deal you were upset to see the Celtics not pull a trigger on, Mike?
He's played 1 year in the last three. Not really.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, he did win the title in that 1 year, but point taken. I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah, we would have had to give up all those things to have one good year, which and maybe you win, maybe you don't. But
yeah,
you know, I'd rather have the pieces that we have going forward and have a good next decade instead of having one good year.
Sure, sure. I mean, I guess that is such a hindsight deal for a lot. And no one had the DeMar package that like the Spurs for some reason really, really wanted, the established star type guy. But yeah, that's Kawhi Leonard as the answer for there. It's still 3-0 for Mike. Katie, you still have a chance here. There's 4 points left on the board. Here we go. This one is, quote, I don't know what we owe him. We gave him an opportunity while he was here.
Aww.
Probably Isaiah Thomas. Mike, Isaiah Thomas 4 years ago.
Yep, that is 2017 after trading Isaiah Thomas for Kyrie Irving. Did that trade bum you out, Mike? I know Celtics fans had a very, very strong affinity for Isaiah Thomas at the time.
Yeah, but it was a smart move. He was about to ask for a ridiculous amount of money that didn't make sense. He was injured, and you were getting a top 10 player in the NBA at the time. It was the right move to do. And the only thing you gave up was Thomas and a pick that ended up being Garland or Colin Sexton.
Sexton.
Yeah. But, you know, that's really not a whole lot to give up for a top 10 player in the NBA at the time. And I get it, but like he was going to ask for more money than he was worth. And he showed he wasn't worth it the next year. He showed he wasn't worth it the next 5 years. Imagine if he was still under contract right now for 40 million on a Russell Westbrook like deal, I'd be pulling my hair out.
Yeah. It's the unfortunate reality of the 5'6" point guard with hip problems, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's fair to maybe count that quote as rather ghoulish from Danny Ainge, but I get the rationale behind that trade. I think what we're finding out here is it's, you know, it's fun to make fun of the Celtics, but honestly, you know, it's a little bit less of a, you know, it doesn't hold up quite as well over time, I suppose, to make
fun Sean, of all this game is
trades,
getting
which
me
which really bums me out
to do yeah. is to respect respect Danny Ainge.
Yeah.
So no, maybe it's having the
reverse, reverse effect as I hoped. Yeah, it's really bumming me the fuck out.
Yeah, but that, I mean, like, this is how the Boston guy. Media works, unfortunately, is that like about trades that didn't happen, those stories get shared. Those stories get talked about.
Sure.
Those stories get traction on social media. So that's why they do that every week. They go, oh, this deal that didn't happen here, let's talk about this. And it's like, this isn't rooted in reality. There's teams talk about players all the time, every day. What do you think? They just don't trade until January, or they don't discuss trades until January, or they don't think about who they're going to target. Like, this is a year round thing.
Yeah, my anti-Celtics agenda is taking a hit here, and it's bothersome to me. But we got to finish out the game here. Mike, you're leading 5-0. Katie, you have a chance to get on the board here, though. The final one is, quote,
I don't know.
Yeah, we had conversations. Not recently, but yeah, we did have conversations. We had numerous talks, but the price really wasn't changing. The price was really high for us, and it was something we didn't really want to do. I think unanimously, we decided it wasn't time for us, and it wasn't the price. It was the player and year.
Maybe. Last year, Harden. Mike, last year, Harden.
Mike, your order of operations of buzzing in is incorrect, but your answer is correct. You get 2 points there. It is James Harden last year being talked about by Danny Ainge. I'll ask you the question again. Is that one you wish? What was the even, like, was it the offer? Like, what was the sort of deal on the table there? Was it, I guess, Jaylen Brown probably involved?
Yeah, it would have been Jaylen and Smart and some other pieces. And James Harden's a great player. I think I'd rather have Jaylen Brown for the next 5 years than James Harden for the next 5 years, because I just don't know that he stays healthy. I don't know that he gets better. Whereas Brown, I think he's still, you know, last year he had a great year. He's had a better year this year. He's looked better this year. So it's like, I think he gets better this year. I think he gets better next year. I think he gets better 2-3 years from now. I think Harden's going to start regressing soon. He's 30. He's 31, right?
Yeah, 32 maybe. Yeah, he's like, he's a James Harden 31, which is a very different kind of 31, I think.
Yeah, and for a guy that has to play his way back into shape every season, smoothies. That's not going to get easier. Like, you know,
yeah,
your metabolism doesn't get better with practice. It's like, if you stop using it.
Sean, I was waiting for you to like do a glowing, some kind of Danny Ainge glowing quote about Amir Johnson, and then I would have gotten at least 1 point.
I loved Amir Johnson. Yeah. Listen, I was a big Amir. One of those fringe guys that I absolutely loved Amir Johnson.
He's the absolute best. He's still cooking in the G League too, just passing on wisdom with Amir ankles rules. Made of straw. Yeah, love him. And Mike, you have just destroyed this game. 7 points for you. You win, Anger things, and in the process have changed this very anti-Celtics podcast into Celtics respecters, which not what I expected, but here we are. I have to ask, though, is there one of those trades that got away over the last few years that does stick with you that as one that you kind of missed out on? Or are you pretty content with where things stand with the Celtics, even if maybe they're kind of a tier below the real title contender crust in the NBA right now?
I think I've kind of eaten my words on the Miles Turner trade. I know at the time, you know, everybody at the time was like, oh, we could trade Gordon Hayward there. And it's like, no, that's not how free agency works and how signing trades work. He has to agree to go there. You need to understand that. And they never did. But, you know, obviously we could have done that with the trade exception or something to that effect. But I think that they, you know, obviously they moved off from Kemba for a reason. I think that they have something planned for a year or two down the line. And I think Donovan Mitchell's going to be the guy that they go after.
Ooh, what makes you say that? Is there like a connection there?
Apparently Brown and Tatum are both pretty good friends with him, but also I don't think he's going to last there much longer with Gobert. And financially, I don't think they're going to be able to afford both of them at a certain point.
Yeah, Gobert seems like a true nightmare to play with. I wouldn't blame anyone for wanting to jet town down there. that is one of the long-held opinions of this podcast that is not affected by the game we've just played. Let's get into the way that we close it every show on here on A Basketball. It's the posters of the week, the very best in NBA social media from the last 7 days. Mike Malloy, you are our guest. We will let you go first here. Do you have a pick in your favorite from NBA posting in the last week?
No. Pretty much the only takes that catch my attention on like on social media are bad ones. Like good ones, they don't really stick in my mind. The bad ones, the bad ones stay in my mind.
Let's get a bad one then, please. I'm dying for this this bad posting slop.
Like a lot of the people that talk about like, oh, the guys in the 80s would beat the crap out of these guys. And it's just like, those guys were doing cocaine and not lifting weights. Those guys didn't lift weights. They thought it was bad to lift weights.
Yeah.
So just no. Stop it. You're saying ridiculous shit.
All right, I'll go with my poster of the week. My poster of the week is Reggie Bullock, who this week responded to a tweet from Nick DiPaola, the guy who reports on shoes for ESPN. He said, listen, I Reggie Bullock, and he means well, but he wrote sniper alert on his Kobe's, then went a whopping 0 for 2 in 31 minutes, cry face emojis. Reggie Bullock quote tweets, who want the smoke with me? Do you do your job and take pics of shoes, sucka? Love it. Any way we can knock down the guy who reports on shoes, I'm all for. Weird beat to have. Reggie Bullock, a king. And that's my poster of the week. Katie, who's yours?
Mine, it is Iman Shumpert for winning Dancing with the Stars. But yeah, it was more how stoked all like the dudes in the NBA were for him. And were just like posting pictures of him with like his Larry O'B trophy, but being like, this is incredible. Or like stills from his, like, I guess his final, I don't watch that show, but like his final dance, and we're just being like, this is unbelievable. And it was just really like beautiful, high stakes stuff. And I don't know, he just seems so stoked.
Yeah, pretty surprised you didn't opt for Shams' really intrepid reporting passing along that Shumpert was the first NBA player to win Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, do you think Shams even smiled when he tweeted that, or was he just like, I've got, this is business, this is my job.
Yeah, this is the news and I need to bring it to the people. The best part, or maybe the worst part, because it is kind of a subtly mean thing, is he tweeted originally, Shumpert's the first NBA player to win Dancing with the Stars, and then he deleted it. He deleted it and sent it back out with ex-NBA player as a correction, which is kind of a dick move, Shams, and not something we needed. We don't need that reporting from Shams at all, I would say. But hey, mm-mm, all the power to him. I guess he's got to sleuth those sources somehow. And you know, if he's not writing a fluff piece about a garbage person, then I guess building up Dancing with the Stars winners is a way to do it.
It's a real shocker that a guy that made his living off of his footwork and is married to a professional dancer would defy the odds and win it all like that.
A real rags to riches underdog.
It's like
story.
That shit with like when Michelle Kwan won it. It's just like, yeah, she used to dance on the ice. No shit, she did good.
Well, that feels like a good place to leave off today's show. Mike Malloy, thank you so much for being here. It was lovely having you on the show. We'd love to have you back again sometime. And thank you for changing our views on Danny Ainge, I guess.
Yeah.
Where can people check out all of your work? Where can they can interact with you? And where can they see you live performing comedy?
Hell yeah. So if you want to see me, MikeMalloy.com has all my dates. I'm going to a bunch of different cities coming up, so check out that. Faded, we got a show here in LA every Friday. Do check that out. We also have a satellite show in Denver and in Portland, so keep your ears open on that. I run a cocktail making show live stream on our Twitch channel. So every Thursday, we do a show called Faded Happy Hour, where we just make nice cocktails and have a guest and just bullshit. So it's a good time.
That sounds like a blast. Everyone, go check out Mike's work. This was great having you, Mike. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me.
Of course, man. That's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Katie, anything you need to promote before we get the hell out of here?
No.
As always, I will be your hype man. Subscribe to Basketball Feelings. It's the greatest thing in the world. And do the paid subscription. It's lovely. Every time I see the monthly email that my payment has gone to Katie, I feel like I've had money well spent. So go subscribe to Basketball Feelings. You can listen to me on Locked On Raptors every day. Subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. We're on YouTube as well. And that will do it. Huge thank you, as always, to producer Dylan for making us sound so, so good. We will talk to you again next week with another episode of Basketball?